Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
I am Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into House of the Dragon Season 2 Iceberg territory, where we did this in the first season. You know, we took everything that we could formulate as a theory. We also went out on the internet and the deep recesses of the dark web to find some crazy theories. And it turns out some of them actually ended up maybe possibly being true, or at least leading us down to a road that where we think they could end up being true or something. So we decided that we would do another iceberg for season two. People seem to really enjoy it. It was, you know, one of our most popular episodes of all time. So we figured that we would do it again here today. It goes without saying, but we just want to say full spoilers for House of the Dragon. That includes the things that have not happened yet. So Fire and Blood spoilers. So if you don't want the future of House of the Dragon spoiled in any way, you might want to come back to this after you've either read Fire and Blood or the show's over.
Yeah, 100%. Just want to say that again. Complete full spoiler territory if you are listening to this or you are watching this. I'm sure we're still going to get comments of people saying, hey, you guys spoiled it for me. But hey, you know what? Somebody else already spoiled it for you, and we'll get to that in one of the things. So,
oh my.
Just like we did in the last one, you know, we got some comments, especially now that that video is kind of taking off. And I just want to kind of reiterate just how an iceberg works, because I think for some people, this might be their first time doing it. They're like, what is this or even doing? So essentially, yeah. Think of it as if you're staring into, you know, the ocean, you see an iceberg. But the real question is, how deep does it go? It gets deeper and deeper. You may only see the little, you know, the tip of the iceberg, right? That's what's sticking out of the water.
That's
what's obvious. As it goes deeper and deeper, who knows how deep it goes? So the deeper we get, the more sort of crazy the theories get, the more wild they get. And remember that some of it is actually just pointing to things that are already known, right? So some of it is informational. It's not necessarily a theory. So because I think in the last one I remember seeing a comment of somebody being like something to do with the Duncan egg one being like, that's not, I can't even remember what the theory was, but it was like tier one, and they're just like, well, that's not surprising.
Yeah,
it's like no joke, man, that's why it's there, you know. So
to give everyone an example, right, tier one for season one would be that, hey, Rhaenyra's kids might be bastards, like obviously.
Exactly,
we know that. That's obviously informational, very obvious. That's tier one. Tier like seven, when we were at the bottom of the iceberg, we were talking about how Drogon actually is responsible for burning down King's Landing in season eight, not Dany. Because it was similar to Vhagar name, you know, I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. So
if you hear us utter some stuff that is preposterous,
exactly. And some of this is also book tie-ins too, which I will say, even going back to that House Strong thing, just to sort of give people a little bit of a comparison here, is in the books, it's just sort of speculated and theorized on that they are, you know, members of House Strong, obviously in the show. Now it's, you know, all but Rhaenyra's all but said it out loud, you know. She's never, like, she has still yet to sort of fully commit to saying that. But so with that, anyway, here we go. We're gonna go sort of back and forth here. These first two actually kind of go together, but tier one of the iceberg, Laenor Velaryon dies off screen. In season one of House of the Dragon, we see Laenor Velaryon flee to Essos after faking his death. In season two, we see his dragon Seasmoke appear restless. Missaria points out to Rhaenyra that perhaps Seasmoke is lonely, indicating that Laenor may have died off screen.
Yeah, this is something that we had talked about, and this went around the circles online as well, with people like reviewing the episode and stuff, and we were trying to figure out exactly, you know, what to get out of that scene when Missaria kind of points at it. And then obviously later in the season, we get maybe we shouldn't say confirmation, but it maybe further alludes to the fact that this is the case whenever Seasmoke is claimed, the idea being that the bond has been broken between Laenor and Seasmoke. So this one feels all but confirmed for me. I mean, in my head canon, at least, Laenor has passed on. I wonder what happened. How do you think he died?
Yeah, I don't know. It's very, that's
already too very, hard face down.
Very, yeah, very interesting if he didn't, which will tie into the next one here too, because it's different obviously in the books. But just real quick before we move on to that next point, yeah, interesting and a really cool way to do it, especially since they gave us the way they did it in season one, led us to believe Laenor may come back. Laenor may be an important player in this role, because in the books, we just know he dies. And actually, his death in the books isn't nearly as speculated upon as it is in the, as it would have been in the show, that people would have think Damon did something, right? It's just, you know, because a lot of the books, I remember, bullet points. So it's these bullet points. So it does tie us into our second one here. And I'll read this one too, Jimmy. Laenor Velaryon is not Adam of Hull. So in season two of House of the Dragon, introduced two bastard sons of Corlys Velaryon, Adam and Alyn of Hull. Adam of Hull even goes on to claim Seasmoke. Now in Fire and Blood, there is some speculation as to who the fathers of these brothers is, with some suggesting, Mushroom and some of the maesters suggesting they could actually be bastards of Laenor Velaryon instead of Corlys. Some fans have even speculated that Adam of Hull could even be Laenor himself, since he claims the same dragon. This theory is obviously not true in the show, as we see they are two very different characters, but in theory could still be true in the books.
Yeah, this is one that I felt like you were pretty keen on, right? When we were going into season two, like before we had confirmation, because it did leave a wide open door for Laenor to come back in this show. And we were thinking, well, why make that change if not to possibly bring him back? And also, the actor was awesome. Like, we really enjoyed his performance. So we were kind of hoping that he would come back even. But it turns out, no, they are in fact two separate people, at least in the show canon. And they are certainly not Laenor's bastards, because they are far too old for that in the show.
Yeah, the book definitely sort of also implies that they are more likely to be Corlys's. But it is interesting in the book, the idea, and I think obviously the reason that was theorized was, it's like, hold on a second. Somebody comes over and is a bastard son of Corlys Velaryon, looks like Corlys Velaryon, and also claims the same dragon, right? So that makes it certainly more interesting. But there's obviously probably another part of that bond there too, especially as we saw in this show, the way they're doing these dragon bonds, and some of the people who are claiming them are still of Targaryen blood. They probably still have a similar smell to them. Like, if you look at the dragon seeds of that previous rider, like, you know, there is actually a connection if you kind of map it out, of like that previous rider to the person who gets it. And here, obviously, you know, they're both sons of Corlys Velaryon.
Yeah. And, you know, you are kind of right. I think it might have been even more interesting if it had been Laenor, just because the historical record would show it to be two totally different individuals, when it turns out that it was the same, right? It's almost like the reverse Shakespeare theory, right? That Shakespeare is all these other different people, and in, you know, reality, it's probably just one, most likely. But it's like a flip of that, which would be kind of cool. But it just goes to show that the show is a telling of Fire and Blood. Doesn't mean that it's the objective truth. So we can still speculate. That's the fun thing about even Laenor's death not happening in the show, is that now when you reread Fire and Blood, you could play around with that thought experiment, because it doesn't really impact the larger story that much.
Yeah.
So it is totally fine to do.
It is interesting too, to think that, you know, what sort of makes more sense is that in the book, obviously, you know, where this theory could still be true, is Laenor Velaryon is the son of Corlys and, you know, Rhaenys, so he actually still has a Targaryen mother. Adam of Hull, we don't know who his mother is. They kind of hint in the show, well, maybe, you know, she was Targaryen. Yeah. Or does he just get it from Corlys, who, you know, the Velaryons and the Targaryens and Velaryons have been intertwining their family for generations at this point too. So it is something far distant. Did Corlys himself sleep with a Targaryen, unnamed Targaryen bastard, that's what gives them their not just Velaryon, but also the Targaryen tie? So that is something that's kind of interesting too, is exactly who is his mother, which is why a lot of people also thought, in the books at least, that it could have been Laenor, which is what I thought was going to be the case, in disguise or, you know, something, with they even played around with that Targaryen tie here as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's about a million different ways it could have went. I think this is one of the cases where, like, the most likely scenario ended up being the canon scenario for the show. Again, for the show. And it all works out at the end.
Yeah. Okay, Jimmy, you want to do the next one?
Yeah, I'll give it a whirl. Let's see see how my dyslexia follows up with this.
Okay.
So the Green Man in season 2, episode 8 of House of the Dragon, as Daemon is approaching the weirwood tree in Harrenhal, we see a small creature in the shadows run towards the tree. This is a Green Man in the A Song of Ice and Fire novels. The Green Men are said to have founded after the pact between the First Men and the Children of the Forest. The Andals were unable to defeat the Order during the invasion of Westeros. The Isle of Faces is seemingly protected by strong magics wielded by the Green Men, as anyone who attempts to land at the island is swept away by the winds. It is conjectured that there are still Children of the Forest living on the Isle under the protection of the Green Men. You guessed it. Some nursery tales, old man loves to talk about these, say that the Green Men have horns and dark green skin. According to Old Nan, our trustworthy fairy tale expert, the Green Men ride elks and sometimes have antlers themselves. Most maesters believe that they are simply people wearing green clothes and a horned headdress, which seems more likely. Otherwise, there have been no confirmed sightings of the Green Men or recorded visits to the Isle of Faces for thousands of years. Hallen Reed, though, purportedly visited the Green Men in his 16th year and stayed with them for a whole winter. He then left the Isle of Faces in 281 AC to travel to the nearby Great Tourney at Harrenhal, of course, leading to the Night of the Laughing Tree situation. And Hallen Reed remains one of the biggest question marks in the main series today.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Green Men themselves are so, they're really not mentioned that much, right? You have to go to, like, they're sort of mentioned in the first little bit of the Dawn Age in World of Ice and Fire. And, you know, even there, I have the book pulled up here. It says whether the Green Men still survive in the Isle is not clear, although there is an occasional account of some foolhardy young river lord taking the boat to the Isle and catching sight of them before winds rise up or a flock of ravens drives him away, similar to what Jimmy was saying. Mm-hmm. The nursery tales claim that they are horned and have dark green skin is a corruption of the likely truth, which is that Green Men wore green garments and horned headdresses. Now, in the show, we really didn't see, it was sort of, you know, dark. We didn't get to really see whether mm-hmm. they are tied to it or whether they are just perhaps, whether they are some sort of mystical creature too. Are they just men who bred with the Children of the Forest? Are they Chronic Men? Ooh. Ooh. Are they another splinter of the Chronic Men, right? The Chronic Men magic that Hallen Reed has.
I kind of love
somehow he's able to go there.
I mean, I love all this because it's most likely a combination of the two, right? It's probably something that's been webbed together over time and then splintered into either this or this, but it's probably a little bit of both. Because how would Hallen Reed in the 16th year just randomly be able to survive the winds and they let him come on the island? Unless maybe Hallen Reed is special and that he has a role to play in the future and the Green Men know that. But regardless, you know, this is during a very mystical time at Harrenhal, and to see House of the Dragon leaning into the fantastical elements and a lot of the old school lore from the main series is really awesome. I mean, that's one of the things I really love about Ryan Condell and the team is that they are not shying away from the more fantastical elements of the show, but Green Men are fascinating. And I would love the idea that maybe it was Children of the Forest and men at one point, like maybe a crossbreed of some sort. It kind of makes you, I don't know if you've ever heard this, Matt, but back in the day when there were Neanderthals, some people wonder if they were any type of mating going on, right? And there's a alternate history theory. It's not true, but it's still interesting to think about. So you know the Ben Elim in the Bible, the angel type people?
Yes.
Yeah, and there's like giants and all this other stuff like in the Bible.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So some people believe that those Ben Elim and giants and whatever that are found in old scripture are actually crossbreeds of Neanderthal and Homo sapiens, which is fascinating.
Some people have Neanderthal DNA.
Yeah. So, I mean, most likely that did happen. But the whole like Bible connection thing is kind of like a loose theory. But this reminds me of that. It's like, okay, well, maybe there's like these mystical little creatures out there called the Green Men. Well, okay, well, maybe they do exist, but maybe they're just simply few and far between or almost extinct or are extinct at this
point. Or they're, I've often thought they could perhaps be, some sort of like male children of the forest, because I believe, maybe I'm wrong on this, but the pictures we have in the book and the picture and what we see in Game of Thrones is we only see female children of the forest. I don't think we've ever seen a male children of the forest, have we? I mean, there might be in like, you know, some of like the official, you know, perhaps it's like some of the official calendars or something, or some of that artwork or something, but I don't believe anything in the, like in sort of the, any, you know, what you would consider to be like the main official thing.
Yeah. And also, you know, clearly we saw children of the forest actually on screen in the TV show, whereas in the books, we've only gotten a little bit of a taste with Bran up there with Bloodraven beyond the wall. So there's plenty of more time.
And those are children, and those are children of the forest. So
yeah, those are children of the forest, not green men. But the question remains: are the green men the same thing? Are they different? Are they a spinoff? Are they all related? I mean, there's tons of questions.
Right.
But the fact that we saw one in House of the Dragon is awesome. I love
it. Yeah.
That.
And the only person to go there is Howlin' Reed, which is what makes
it. And you know how much I love Howlin' Reed. So
yeah, we know. Yeah. Okay. Okay. This is a pretty controversial one. Again, still here in tier one. Rhaena is taking Nettles' place.
Oh boy.
In Fire and Blood, Nettles, 16 years old, was able to tame the wild dragon Sheepstealer by bringing a freshly slaughtered sheep each morning, causing Sheepstealer to become accustomed to the girl, according to Mushroom. Daemon had come to love Nettles and took her as his bedmate, despite the fact that she was an unlikely paramour for the prince, though Mushroom's claim of that is often questionable. Archmaester Gul'dane, just remember real quick that Fire and Blood is written by two sources, an Archmaester and Mushroom, the court jester. Gul'dane considers the story to be far more likely than most of his tales. Gul'dane further references Maester Norrin's Chronicles of Maidenpool, which recorded that the prince and his bastard girl slept in adjoining bedrooms, but that they ate together each night and morning. Norrin wrote that Daemon doted upon Nettles as a man might dote, or excuse me, doted on his on Nettles as a man might dote upon his daughter, and described Daemon teaching Nettles common courtesies and giving her fine gifts, such as an ivory hairbrush, a silvered looking glass, a velvet and satin cloak, and leather riding boots. Norrin further wrote that Daemon showed Nettles how to wash herself properly, and recorded that maid servants reported they often shared a single tub washing each other. So
creepy.
That yes. So that is something that we've talked about on the podcast, and we've actually talked a lot about on Patreon, because I haven't wanted to talk about anything about Nettles in the show since we've been avoiding spoilers, but since we're in complete spoiler territory here today. Yeah, I mean, so that is the piece that I've actually sort of thought might be interesting with Massaria kissing Rhaenyra. Is what ends up happening is Rhaenyra hears about this and basically denounces Daemon. And that's like sort of the real fall of Rhaenyra ultimately, mm-hmm. is that now she's said, well, I don't even want you back, Daemon. Right. I'll just do this all myself. And it's because Daemon potentially has another love interest. So if they're flipping that around and they're going to do that with Rhaenyra.
Yeah,
but now it's kind of interesting too, because Daemon like has seen all these prophecies and it seems like he's going to follow her no matter what. So kind of something interesting that they're going to play with there, and we're going to see. Regardless, it does seem like they are giving this character Nettles to Rhaena, and you know, if you look at it, it could be, you know, a Daemon's daughter. But it just seems weird because Daemon has, well, he other than that like deleted scene, right, where he's hugging them, he hasn't really interacted with them that much.
Yeah, you know what's weird though is that I remember reading somewhere that like the actress, and maybe it's Bela or Rhaena, someone can correct me in the comments or an email,
they will,
I know that there was a reported rumor that one of the actresses said that at the end of season two that one of them received Dark Sister, like Daemon gives it to them. And I'm wondering, you know how we know the season was cut from 10 to 8 episodes by the studio, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we see that moment in the early season 3. And here's my thing. So if Nettles is going to be replaced, which I'll come back to if I think that's going to happen, if Nettles is going to be replaced, it's going to be a split, I think, between Alice Rivers and Rhaena. And I think Reyna is going to take on like more of that fatherly figure. You know what I'm talking about? Like, I think, I mean, the stuff that makes this kind of creepy with Nettles, I think he'll take a more fatherly role in Reyna's life. Whereas maybe possibly Alice Rivers will remain more of the love interest, and then they're going to have to change things up with Aemon. It might become a love triangle of some sorts, or not really sure exactly how it's going to go down. I am was 99.9% positive that they were going to cut Nettles until I saw the Ryan Condell interview where he's basically asked point blank about Nettles. And he's like non-committal about them, it being cut. And he's like, yeah, you just got to like wait and see. I'm like, well, wait and see. Like, what are we going to wait and see for? I mean, it seems all but confirmed that Reyna is going with Cease, right? I mean, it seems very obvious.
Or but, Sheep Stealer. Yeah.
Yeah. Sheep Stealer. I'm sorry. Sheep Stealer. But I don't know. Ryan Condell's interview, either he's baiting the audience, which seems like a terrible idea, or maybe we should hold out hope for Nettles. I'm not sure. But my guess is, if I had to go with my gut, she's cut, and her role would be split between Alice Rivers and Reyna, I think.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's possible she could show up in season three, and then Reyna goes on sort of her path, which to go, if you go really go down her story, she doesn't really do a whole lot. I mean, she marries and has a bunch of kids. That's sort of her life. Yeah. I mean, yeah, in the Dance of the Dragon. So I also don't think she's going to get the whole Dark Sister thing is so weird because, you know, again, we're in spoiler territory here. So obviously Dark Sister takes on a very specific role, right? Which we'll, you know, we'll get to when Damon.
It has another Damon place.
Right, we're in spoiler territory, but even still we're trying not to spoil it, but
yeah
I mean, so Dark Damon is going to use Dark Sister you know in the future, and so what's he going to do if he gives that away? So yeah, I mean, to me it would be like, what would cause him to want to now he's going to become this like ultra father figure? I don't know, right? Maybe he has some more visions and he thinks that the princess who's promised or any of that stuff comes from like his line and not Rhaenyra's, and they are still going to play out this like fracture between Daemon and Rhaenyra as things go on, and maybe that will be the thing, is where he instead of beginning to favor, but he just had all these visions of Rhaenyra sitting the Iron Throne. So it's going to be interesting. They could still have Nettles, but yeah, it does seem like Rhaena's going to get it. And I mean, she goes on to have a bunch of kids and stuff. I mean, if they're just going to skip over that, like, you know, are we ever going to come back to that story? How are they going to do that? We'll have to wait and see. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that we'll.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ever see Aegon the Third at like an Aegon the Third show, you know, I mean, maybe at some point, but that's just not one of the big stories. You know, obviously we know we're getting Duncan Egg, we know we're getting Aegon's Conquest inside of the Targaryen thing. There's still a lot more stuff, but Aegon the Third is not the most exciting.
Yeah. And hey, who knows? Here's the thing. I feel like they could have made Rhaena more interesting than her role in Fire and Blood, but did they need to make it Nettles' role? Probably not. You know, that's one of those things where it is interesting that they would choose to cut Nettles over every other character that they could have cut here. Like the Lannister character could have got cut at some point. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that is one of the reasons why I'm like, maybe we're being bamboozled. Maybe Nettles does show up in season three. Who knows?
Yeah. And yeah. Now it's difficult too to know what stuff did they move around in editing to turn this into 8 episodes. I actually saw somebody on Reddit today, actually, and they were making a good point, is there's a shot that we didn't see in the trailer that shows Baela, and she is like on her dragon and it's clearly, you know, burning something. And if you remember her one shot of her on the dragon when she was chasing Kristen Cole, if you actually go frame by frame, it's not the same shot. So clearly that was something that was used. Now we don't, they obviously probably didn't film those big battles, but maybe they were filming some stuff. Who knows? I mean, the whole budget thing, when you're filming, you may think, well, we might use this, we might use that. And then to, you know, to piece it around. So because of the constraint of the season, it's hard to know too. Some of that stuff might have been reused and reworked into something True. Else. The Rise of Skywalker is a very good thing to look at, where Justice League and Zack Snyder's Justice League as well, when you look at, like, you, because of the studio has to come in and cut budgets and move things around, you can, like, if you just go on YouTube, you can see people breaking down like shots and stuff like that, and see like, oh yeah, clearly that was probably meant for something. Like sometimes they're even in reverse, which is crazy. Yeah. Like a lot of the stuff in Rise of Skywalker, there's actually moments where it's like, if you watch it in reverse, you're like, oh, that shot makes way more sense in reverse than it does, which is wild. And then Justice League is another great one, but of course it did get the completed version. So you can actually really watch those back to back and see, oh yeah, those are really meant to be totally different movies.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder, like, if they just take random shots for promote, like, I don't know, maybe they just have a stock file of just video, you know what I mean? Like, of things.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Of like, hey, I need you on a dragon. We might use it for something. You never know. Yeah.
Yeah.
B-roll. 100%. Yeah. So yeah. Interesting. I know a lot of people are upset about the fact that we don't have Nettles. I think we could still see her, but I would say at this point, it does seem like Reyna is going to do it. Otherwise, I don't really know what she's going to do in season 3. I mean, you could have an interesting thing where she goes to take the dragon and she can't do it, and then it's stolen from her. Remember, because Bela was going to go claim Vhagar.
Yeah, and that's right.
Aemon took it. So now they could both potentially have that, and maybe that's the story you're going to tell. Also, if she claims Sheep Stealer, maybe Daemon views that as like a big deal, because Sheep Stealer's so, you know, kind of wild. And maybe he really respects that. And maybe that's something that causes him to dote on her, like the Nettles route of it being his daughter, not his lover.
Yeah, and Daemon is a changed man, obviously, after everything at Harrenhal and coming out of it. And location wise, it actually does make sense. Like, they're not super far from me. I mean, they're not super close either, but like, they could definitely run into each other in season 3. I'm starting to think the Dark Sister comment though was a troll by the actress. I think she was just trolling us, because when I heard it, I was like, excuse me. The Dark Sister has a job to do, and it's certainly not in Reyna or Bela's hands.
Yeah. And if you go down Nettle's path, excuse me, I mean, she just kind of flies off and disappears.
Yeah
but don't really know. So yeah. Interesting. Okay, next one here, Jimmy, I can do this one too, which is Daenerys's eggs. So in House of the Dragon season 2 episode theory, Rhaenyra sends 3 of her sons along with Rhaena Targaryen to the Vale for safety. She also gives Rhaena 4 eggs, and director Geeta Patel confirmed these are Daenerys's dragon eggs. So at least in the show version, those are Daenerys's eggs. All of us who work on the show are big Game of Thrones fans, so it was very exciting to shoot that scene.
Yeah. So this this got a little bit of flack, because in the books, this probably would not be the case based on what we know about timeline, where they end up, yada, yada, yada. Yeah.
We don't know that the eggs that, by the way, real quick, that the eggs that Dany gets are the ones from Lysofar Seer or whatever her name is, that people think is who it is, because it's like, oh, 3 eggs, but we don't know for sure. But so that seems to be the theory.
Yeah. And that's another pet character people really love, right? In the histories, people get a little upset when those people are robbed of their roles and whatnot. And I can understand that. I have pet characters that I love as well, would not want to see them, like Helen Reed, for instance, who got absolutely shafted by the main series, and I never let it go. But I think this is kind of cool fan service and connection. You know, fan service is thrown around as a negative most of the time on the internet, but I always say, HBO is always going to link these two shows together. They want you to remind you about Game of Thrones, so maybe you'll go back and rewatch it a couple times, get those streaming numbers up. It's common sense for business practice. So this is cool. I have no problems with this. Again, show canon is show canon. Book canon is book canon. And when I saw them, I knew that they were going to tell us that this was Danny's eggs. I knew it for a fact. As soon as I saw them, I was like, oh.
Oh, yeah, because they're the exact same coloring and everything.
Yeah, I didn't need any confirmation, honestly. This is one of those times where the director didn't have to say anything. I think most of us watching who had watched the, you know, Thrones a couple times, we were like, okay, they're connecting these two things. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it's cool. I think it's great. You're trying to build out that universe. You're trying to connect House of the Dragon to Game of Thrones, and they did a lot of that. I mean, they did a ton of that this season. And I mean, obviously even that final vision that Daemon has. So I think it's good. I don't think it really hurts a character that we're probably never going to see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, you know, it's another point in time where it's very unlikely we see that character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only thing you could have done with it is, remember, they actually were planning on some of the, like, a Corlys Velaryon spinoff. He was going to get his own show because he goes on a bunch of adventures, and he actually goes to Ashai and he sees the dragon. It's Alyssa Farman, excuse me. And he believes he sees Sun Chaser, her dragon. And maybe then he sees those clutch of eggs, and that's the way, you know, you do it. But it seems like the, you know, maybe the, when the Corlys thing was cut, that they were, you know, that seems like it didn't really get that far off. They're like, yeah, we're not going to go down that.
It almost feels like a lot of Corlys' stuff has been cut, right? Like, because, like, I've just seen
his entire season two. Yeah, his entire season two.
Him chilling.
It literally feels like he filmed all of his scenes in like 2 days.
He did.
I mean, especially the shipping busy.
They were like, well, yeah, we'll just throw you in here for a week, you know,
do what
you can.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, hey, that was it for tier one of the iceberg. So now we're going to go down to tier two, and things are going to get a little deeper.
Yeah, this is pretty crazy. Okay. So this is now we're getting beneath the surface of the water. So these are things that you may know or have heard, but a little bit more unknown, but still fairly tame. So tier two starts off with, they being the showrunners have foreshadowed every character's death in House of the Dragon. House of the Dragon has foreshadowed 6 character deaths that will take place in the upcoming seasons. Joffrey spoils House.
Oh, nope. Sorry.
Oh,
nope.
I'm sorry.
You read a little. That's okay. I moved it on the doc. I saw you do it. That's okay. My bad. I should have split. I didn't split it up in our doc.
It's all good. Reading.
No. Yeah, I have a link to an article you can click on. No. So, yeah, I'll go through all the shots here, Jimmy. So there's 6 of them, although one of them is a little iffy, but it's still a good
full thing. Spoilers, so, people. Full spoilers,
and this will tie into you know, Joffrey spoiling something. So Rhaenyra, right? That shot of her standing in front of Vermithor, right? As we're doing in the dragon pit, that is, we know, Rhaenyra's downfall, destroyed, killed by a dragon. Mm-hmm. So we see, like, go ahead.
I was saying, and we see her watching a fire breathing dragon burning someone alive, and she's essentially seeing exactly where she will possibly be standing by the end of her arc, depending on whether it eats her or lights her on, who knows what they'll do. But it feels very much like that is a scene that we were meant to take in as foreshadowing.
Yeah. Daemon Targaryen, obviously we see him at the ending of it, you know, falling into the lake. Helena comes to him and says, you're gonna die at the God's Eye. We know the big battle of the God's Eye. Same thing with Aemon. You know, Helena tells this to him right then and there, you're gonna die at the God's Eye, which we know that's what should be hopefully the most epic battle in all of Westeros TV. Two guys battling on a dragon, jumping off and attacking each other with swords as well, and both of them get that foreshadowing. And a lot of the shots of Harrenhal this season also were outside of it, which, you know, Harrenhal sits on an enormous lake, and you have the God's Eye in the middle, the island where the green men hang out. There's tons of weirwood trees there. Also, by the way, that is also the lake that will be right on that lake, just at a different part, in White Walls in the Duncan Egg show.
Yeah, a lot of scenery that's going to be very important in the future. And how about, shout out to Helena just out here spoiling the whole show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's much like Joffrey in Game of Thrones. We'll get to here in a minute. So Kristen Cole, his isn't super specific. I guess there is a shot of him sitting on the... when he's sitting on that log talking to Rhaenyra's brother, or to Allison's brother, excuse me, and he's got the sword there. You know, I mean, he certainly seems like knows he's heading toward death. The first one that really caught my eye was Jacaerys, you know, Valyrian Jace, right? Is you see that shot of Baela walk up behind him with the crossbow. Not that she's gonna shoot him, but just sort of, you just that framing of it, since he is crossbowed down.
Yes. And that was the one that caught my attention immediately, where I was like, oh, I see. Maybe we need to pay attention a little bit more. And then obviously six of the deaths have been foreshadowed with really nice cinematography and shots from the crew. Yeah. So pretty dope.
And the final one is Helena's, which is going to be one of the saddest ones, which I actually thought they might have. We talked about this. Man, they might move that up.
We thought
they might. They might move it up. But now we know Helena's way too important to kill off early.
So, I mean, she has done a lot at this point, and being
for a character who in the books who's done like nothing.
I would not be surprised if we see her bite the bullet even mid season three. Yeah. I see her time coming to an end. They've gotten miles out of this character more than what we got in Fire and Blood, and what a great performance.
Yeah, and of course her death is, you know, she falls and onto some spikes, and during that riot scene when Allison and her are fleeing the Sept, right, she's shoved up against a wall and kind of like a door, and the door has some notches out of it, and so it almost looks like in a way that she is falling on spikes. So yeah, interesting that they have done this.
Yeah, I love this stuff. I mean, this is stuff we love in the books, and this is them taking it to a visual medium, a completely different type of storytelling medium, and still doing the same things, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, let's move on to the next one here, which again, this is a little more informational, but it does tie into the last one we just read, which is Joffrey spoils House of the Dragon. As if Joffrey wasn't bad enough in Game of Thrones, he goes as far to ruin and spoil the events of House of the Dragon. In episode 4 of season 3 of Game of Thrones, Joffrey tells Margaery that Rhaenyra was eaten by her own brother's dragon right in front of her son. He then points out that that's what's left of her buried in the crypts below the Great Sept of Baelor. He doesn't offer many more details regarding the specifics of what happened or why it happened, and many viewers in the original series might have overlooked this story, especially when told by Joffrey.
Yeah, Joffrey, still a dick in every manageable way. Yeah, possible, huh? this is true in the books, as is in the TV show, I believe. I'm pretty sure that the Dance of Dragons is spoiled also in the book. So it's like one of those things where you're almost getting punished for reading the main series first, you know?
Yeah, because that's where we get a lot of the information about the histories that George expanded upon further.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting that George wrote that book back in, you know, 96, 97, 98, 90, somewhere around there. And the fact that he had a lot of these stories in mind, like Eric and Eric are mentioned very early on in the series. And to know that he had that all in his brain and then he wrote it all out is, you know, insane. I mean, it's why he's the GOAT.
It's why it's taken so long.
That's right. It's so true, though. The man probably is going mad.
Yeah. All right, Jimmy, you want to take this last one here?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a really good one, and I have multiple feelings about this. So, is Sunfire dead? King Aegon II Targaryen might have survived the wounds he sustained during the Battle of Rook's Rest in House of the Dragon Season 2, Episode 4, but the fate of his sweet puppy dog of a dragon, Sunfire, has been less certain. In Episode 5, Sir Criston Cole ambiguously described Sunfire as long in the dying. Several episodes later, the season 2 finale seemingly confirms that Sunfire succumbed to his injuries. And this, I have so many thoughts about this, Matt, but I'm going to say this. I think that there is still an opportunity that Sunfire could be alive. I however, do not understand. So it would be a big shock value in season 3 for Sunfire to come back, because Sunfire has stuff to do in the series. Like,
as we talked about.
Yeah.
In the past two theories, they're all connected.
Yeah. So Sunfire has things to do, and that makes me feel as if Sunfire is going to be alive, and it's going to be this kind of like shock slash like twist moment. I was fine with it whenever Criston Cole said Sunfire was long in the dying, because he had to get out of there as soon as possible. He didn't see the dragon really die. He had to get Aegon back to King's Landing. But at the end, where we kind of hear that, yeah, Sunfire succumbs to the injuries, dead. It's like, okay, now you're like going out of your way to make sure I think Sunfire is dead to turn it back around on me later. It's just one of those times where like, I feel like the showrunners are putting themselves in a bad situation. Like, cause people are going to complain. People are going to be like, you know, this doesn't make any sense. Cause who wouldn't have known that a dragon was alive? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they're inviting criticism for this being like a nonsense twist. And it's also just not really necessary in my mind. The flip side of this, folks, is that Sunfire might be dead. Sunfire might be dead in the show, and they're going to do very different things.
Yeah, I mean, So here's why I don't think that Sunfire is dead. What I think is Sunfire, you know, remember, the way information travels, Aegon, when he says Sunfire's dead, is also at like a very low point in his life. You know, thinking his brother wants to kill him, you know, all of the things. So I think what's likely to happen is that Sunfire is going to obviously be alive and perhaps like in hiding or something, who knows, in a cave, or we don't know. But I think they're going to use it ultimately as a moment of like Aegon's reappearance onto the scene as returning as the king.
Yeah.
Right. And Laris is going to help him get there. And Laris may also know the whereabouts of Sunfire. And that may be the thing that happens, is Sunfire is alive and has regained some strength. And Aegon will do the same, because Aegon has some actually like important roles to play going forward. You know, when like because he's left King's Landing and he's got to go take it back.
Yeah.
So when he goes and does that, and he's got. And he's going to do some traveling. We know he goes to Dragonstone. He goes to some other places. So, yeah, I think it's likely that we're going to see Sunfire, obviously, alive and do it. Because if they don't, then, like, now you're talking about it's tough because they're spending all this time trying to connect Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon. And that would be an enormous retcon. And then of all of the people who says it in Game of Thrones, Joffrey is like the one person who you would want to believe on this thing.
Yeah.
Right. It's true. I mean, it's not like if Tyrion said it, you should really believe it's true, but like, we're talking about a brutal death. That's kind of Joffrey's expert area. I mean,
and he isn't known for his history lessons. Right. So like,
exactly.
That one by heart. Cause he's a sadist.
Right.
He's terrible. But
yeah,
I don't know, man. I just think that they've went so far out of their way now to make it seem like Sunfire's dead, that whenever they do the twist and say, hey, Sunfire's actually alive, it just seems... Here's the thing. It seems a little far-fetched that no one in Rook's Rest would send a raven to King's Landing and say, hey, by the way, the dragon down here, eating people. We need it to go. Like, you know what I'm saying? Now, I'm going to argue with myself a little bit. I don't know how much time has really passed. What has it been? 2 weeks? Maybe the dragon is still down and out and they're trying to fight for its life at this moment. Like, I don't know, but I still think that they would send a raven, dude. Like, I don't understand why they would send a raven.
You would think.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm a little worried about this one. I mean, Sunfire should be alive. I would rather Sunfire be alive. I just think that they're trying to set up this big twist, and I think it's a little too far for me personally, but we'll see. I don't know how they're going to do it yet. And we got to remember, Aegon's leaving King's Landing with Laris in a wagon at the end of season two. Where is he going? And where the hell was Otto?
Yeah.
I know it has nothing to do with anything, but I just keep wondering what the hell happened to Otto.
Yeah, I know, man. It's all interesting. It's all connected. It's going to, man. It is all connected. Yeah, no, it's going to be, it's going to be interesting. I mean, hey, so yeah, that's just tiers one and two, guys. And that's, you know, we've got a couple. Of course, we covered actually a lot of even some of the further out stuff in our House of the Dragon season one iceberg. And eventually I'll probably connect them and do like a big one. And then by the end, we'll have four and I'll just connect it. And it'll be like some 16-hour episode if you want to literally sit through the entire thing. We also did one for the upcoming Duncan Egg show. If you've read the book, which isn't too long of a read, you can check that out as well. So yeah, Jimmy and I will be back and we will be doing part two of this, where we go to tiers 3, 4, and 5. And let me tell you, you know, if you listen to our Duncan Egg one and you're like, oh my god, these guys are talking some serious crazy stuff in tier 5, remember, hey, In tier five of the season one, Jimmy and I speculated that Damon might become the Three-Eyed Raven.
And it's looking very like
now we might be revisiting that in tier three because it's far more viable. So
it's crazy.
So yeah, so Jimmy, yeah, we were talking about that, you know, during season one. So anyway, so who knows? Some of the stuff we talk about, you can come back and look at too. So yeah, so awesome. Well, as always, guys, yeah, stay tuned. We will be back. We will be back with part two of this iceberg. It'll be, you know, pieced together at the end as well. So this is really just sort of a part one, and then we'll get to that part two with the deeper theories. And then we will be returning to the reread Storm of Swords.
Yes.
Dive back into it, making some more headway in the books. And you never know. Now any of that stuff from Dance of Dragons comes up in the books, as we're rereading the thing, it makes it that much more interesting, because who knows what impact the show has had, or is it some ways of George to write some stuff out or get some stuff out that maybe he wanted to include that he didn't. So
yeah,
as I just said, it's all connected. So with that, guys, as always, thank you for watching, thank you for listening, and remember that winter is coming.